For Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. Your raincoat will definitely be your new best friend for about 4 or 5 more days. Another 5 to 10 inches of rain expected to fall across central North Carolina from today through Sunday morning. News 14 is reporting the heaviest rain likely to fall Friday and Saturday. Now, that's partly due to Hurricane Joaquin. The storm is strengthened from a tropical storm to a Category 1 hurricane. That happened this morning. Now, slowly drifting also to the southwest near the Bahamas. By Friday, the storm should turn to the north and pick up some speed. Right now, it's tracking near or just off the coast of North Carolina through the weekend. During that time, it could become as strong as a Category 2 or maybe even stronger. Could be a 3 or 4. The exact track of the storm remains uncertain at this time. Many models have kept the storm just off the Carolina coast, depending on the lows that are coming in. However, some of the latest models into the forecast center suggest the storm could track even closer to the coast, potentially brushing the Outer Banks and making landfall anywhere from northeastern North Carolina to the Jersey Shore. So, keep an eye on this storm. It really could affect parts of North Carolina, especially with all the rain we've had lately. Big trees could come down if we have some strong winds and with a lot more rain, because we're looking at a lot of rain across most of the state. Businesses were evacuated and traffic was blocked off along Highway 301 and Dunn this morning after a vapor leak was reported at a chemical plant. Brainerd Chemical's president happened to be on site and told WTVD the leak occurred during the unloading of a bulk tanker truck that was filled with hydrochloric acid. The vapor cloud formed after about 30 minutes because of a leaky gasket on top of the stationary tank the chemical was being pumped into. Firefighters gave the all clear after the vapor cloud moved north and dissipated. NC State football player Shadrack Thornton has had another brush with the law. This time he allegedly struck a man with his moped while driving on the sidewalk near campus. The victim had to get stitches after being knocked down an embankment. Thornton was arrested at his home and charged with failing to give aid to an injured person and failure to provide information. He has a court date at the end of October on previous charges of driving the moped without a helmet and exceeding a safe speed. He also has a past criminal record. Thornton practiced this morning for the Wolfpack. Team officials have not released a statement regarding potential punishment from Tuesday's incident. Billy Graham has released what could be his last book. WREL reports his son Franklin, president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, says, "Where I Am, Heaven, Eternity, and Our Life Beyond took 2 years to complete." He says at 96, his father has problems seeing, hearing, and walking, but his mind is still clear, and he keeps up with world events. If you thought your commute was tough today, be thankful it didn't involve hundreds of thousands of bees. Yes, you heard that right. Hundreds of thousands of bees. Fox News Radio's Jeff Manasso has the details.
This is the sound from inside Garvin County Sheriff's Deputy Carl Zink's cruiser yesterday. It was covered with tens of thousands of bees after a truck carrying upwards of 1 million honeybees overturned on southbound I-35 south of Oklahoma City. Dozens of crates carrying bees broke open. We're told only a couple of people, including the deputy, suffered minor bee stings. And traffic was backed up for miles as beekeepers worked to capture as many as possible. No word on what caused the big rig to crash. In Chicago, Jeff Manasso, Fox News Radio.
He will be back for the 2016 session, but he's not going to be running for re-election to the state house. Representative Paul Skip Stam made the surprise announcement just before lawmakers gaveled out after an extra long session that ended at 4:18 this morning. The 65-year-old is an 8-term veteran of the chamber and is a lawyer from Apex. And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now it's time to find out what matters with Chad Adams.
Please stand by.
We now take you live to the Institute of Rational Thought for a special broadcast. Hard-hitting interviews and relevant information to make your day. It's Chad Adams.
Oh. What to talk about today? Wasn't like there's anything that happened, right? 24 hours later, 22 hours, we're back. An interesting night. It was like, you know, it's weird because the truth is that the House and Senate stuck around till 4:15, 4:30 in the morning. And you had, was there a special deadline? No. Was there a reason they had to do that? No. In fact, there were pictures of them playing games and dancing in the Senate, waiting for the House to do things. Pleasantries, even Facebook posts. Oh, I'm going to print T-shirts, one of them said. It said, I survived 2015. We need to print T-shirts saying we survived watching what they were doing. Listening ad nauseum at what they were doing. It was interesting. I don't even know. You know, I've thought since last night, watching things unfold. We were talking about House Bill 373 yesterday. You know, lest you think, oh no, there's another acronym. I have no idea what the hell Chad's talking about. Yesterday, one of the big issue, and if you were following the conservative postings on Facebook as it relates to North Carolina, I'm not talking about the usual vitriol directed at Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or the usual hoorahs about whoever the flavor of the day for anyone is, whether it's Ben Carson, Fiorina, Trump, Jeb Bush, whatever. That stuff's out there. It's a lot of interesting, funny, and stuff on Facebook. But the conservatives, the grassroots people across North Carolina, we had a couple calls from across the state yesterday on House Bill 373. And it had to do with the creation of these new committees, these affiliated committees, these affiliated political committees that essentially function like their respective parties. So Democrats will have them, Republicans would have them. And it was a way to make sure money didn't go to the party. Now, furthermore, the party, if you Republican or Democrat, if they can accept unlimited monies, they can do a lot of things that candidates can't do, that the caucuses can't do, but no more. That was being changed. So the grassroots activists across the state were putting tremendous pressure on the governor's office to the point the governor was very concerned about this legislation, creating these new groups. I mean, part of it could have led to the expulsion of Republican committeeman David Lewis. Some of the angst was directed at him for the creation of these kind of things. So as it unfolded, the situation went from bad to worse, but there was a blip. A lot's happening. You know, a lot of bad things happen, regardless of which party's in control of the legislature. A lot of really bad legislation gets made. It was so bad that Senator Jeff Tart wrote that he was essentially going to have to go home and read for the next 2 weeks to figure out what the heck they voted on. The majority of legislators have no idea the intricacies and details of the legislation that they have created. They have created things the likes of which we will learn as the law is implemented. It's the worst way to make law. It's the worst way to impact people's lives. It's the worst way to be as a leader. It makes you not a leader. It makes you a reactionary. You're creating legal situations that you haven't even read about. It says, you know, Nancy Pelosi, we ridiculed mercilessly on the conservative side of the aisle, Republicans and conservatives alike, ridiculed mercilessly Nancy Pelosi saying, hey, we have to pass it to find out what's in it, referring to the 2,000 pages of Obamacare. Now we have Republicans saying the same thing about their own legislation, not just referring to one piece of legislation, but referring to a vast array of things, the likes of which they shouldn't have been voting on. But back to these affiliated political committees. So they're being created. The caucus will have one. The Senate caucus will have one. The House caucus and the minority, the Democrats, will have one, although they didn't really like this. They don't really want this. And I will go back a little bit in history, not very far, but we can go back about 15 years and look at Mark Basnight, R.C. Soles, Jim Black, Tony Rand. If we look at that period of history and these guys were to have come up with this type of legislation, Republicans would have come unglued. Rightfully so, they would have pointed out that this creates an incumbency protection racket the likes of which we've never seen. It creates a methodology by which they get to collect unlimited money for themselves and direct the way in which that money is spent. Unlimited money to protect incumbents. So a lot of grassroots pressure was brought to bear to say this is just not necessary, it's not needed. So the Republican parties bring their newly minted ED, who had not, by the way, been offered, you know, the monetary job yet. So Dallas Woodhouse, former Americans for Prosperity guy, walks down to the General Assembly, I guess, to give cover, to pretend to give cover to the legislators, trying to use what little grassroots cred he's got to say, oh, this is an expression of unity. So the grassroots people are fighting against this. Dallas Woodhouse goes down to the legislature to say there is unity, brings Hassan Harnett, the new chairman, almost like a lamb to slaughter, taking him down there. And they kind of have a photo op with Phil Berger. When's the last time you saw an ED in a photo op from either party during the legislative session? And says, nothing changes. Nothing changed. This is that they listened to the grassroots activist. They brought them together. And this new bill, this new way, will be good for us all. He essentially lied. That's the truth. The media's not going to care about this because they don't understand these parties. I did News 14 Carolina. We talked a little bit about it. And both myself and the Democrat on this agreed this is bad policy. This is power grab. It's power, unmitigated power being given to certain individuals. Now, what Dallas was referring to, which is kind of funny, is that rather than Tim Moore, the Speaker of the House, being able to direct the funds, rather than Phil Berger being allowed to direct the funds, they elect someone from the caucus to direct the funds. Really? What person elected to that post is going to go against the leaders? Now, Dallas also tried to convince you and the public, unconvincingly, because the grassroots figured this out. It's funny what happened on Facebook, and we'll get to that in a minute, because all of this, the narrative of what went down, is illustrative of the fact that politics is imperfect, that policy is imperfect, that all of this is, it's about spin, and it's about power, and it's about freedom, and it's about the right thing to do. This is all sitting on the governor's desk. I don't know if he signed it yet. But the bill was supposed to be about moving the presidential primaries to March 15th, and the regular primary, putting them all at the same date, making them proportional. Now, that's good. That's what everyone kind of wanted, so that all the presidential candidates will come here because they will have a shot at getting a couple delegates, not just a winner-take-all. Now, it creates problems when you're recruiting candidates and stuff because now the sign-up period will be in December, and those people out there looking to challenge people in primaries are going to have to look a lot harder. So it's a little bit of incumbency protection, but nonetheless, it was acceptable. It merges them, saves a little taxpayer, saves a couple million taxpayer dollars. But then they started adding crap to it. And I mean crap. Up to your ears, coming out your ears, crap. Unneeded crap. And it's about power. So somehow in the communication, so Dallas is communicating, the new executive director of the party is communicating to the media that the grassroots, he's representing them. No, he's not. Not even close. And says they listened. And so what was the listening that they did? Well, he said, well, because they changed that it wouldn't be Tim Moore directing it, but someone that the caucus appoints. I don't know. Maybe it'll be Nelson Dollar that'll choose how that money's spent. But that's what he said the grassroots wanted. No, it gets even worse. They set up these same committees for the Council of State, the governor and lieutenant governor. So all of the Council of State will also have these affiliated political committees that can accept unlimited donations. And Dallas said, there's no change. Nothing's going to change. It's my understanding that the caucus will still give money to the party. It's my understanding that it will still, you know, everything's fine. Nothing to see here. It's a 50-car pileup with the Titanic in the background while the moon explodes on the horizon. But there's nothing to see here, Dallas. Because Dallas told us there's nothing to see here. And he must be telling us the truth. The moon. So this it gets funnier and funnier. So that's not what the grassroots wanted. It's completely 180 degrees. But Dallas is trying to tell you, the new ED is trying to tell you, everything is fine here. No. This could very well be the end of political parties as we know them in North Carolina, because there's no need, unless you want to give money to the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, you now can just give it to your respective, the caucus, unlimited amounts of money. So Duke Power could give $10 million by the caucus if they wanted to. Either caucus or both. The solar lobby is cheering The solar lobby's like, oh my God, unlimited donations? Absolutely, we can protect our people and get our subsidies back. Yippee! Thank you, Dallas, for giving us political cover. Thank you, Dallas, what else? Because it's not about the issues to Dallas. It's not about the platform. It's not about being conservative. It's just not to him. It's never going to be about that for him. So that gets interesting. But the way it unfolded on Facebook is particularly sad and funny at the same time. So as I'm kind of monitoring this, yeah, I'm reading, enjoying my evening. It's a little rainy for my taste. But I'm checking it out. And I see that people said, yippee, House Bill 373 vetoed. And this went viral. I mean, it went... Someone duct taped the moon back on the horizon, put the Titanic back afloat, and said everything was fine. But it was duct tape. It wasn't real. The moon had still exploded. The Titanic was still sinking. The cars were still piled up on the interstate. There was still a lot to see. So they were spreading this rumor out there, and it was fascinating. It just spread like crazy. But alas, it wasn't true. There was no veto. In fact, in the process, and it was funny because people were cheering, oh, governor, my favorite governor, I'm so glad that Governor McCrory vetoed this. I'm so glad the governor's standing up for grassroots. It was cheers, I mean, accolades, hundreds of them, thousands of them across the state. And then, you know, I got to a point, I was like, wait a minute, this is just not true. I'm typing it up. Just not true. Here's what's happening. What's happening is the bill's worse, not better, and it's on the way to the governor's desk. It's much worse. It creates more committees that can hide money and spend money. And I love it when Dallas said that you know, they got their things and they're not going to spend money during the primary. Again, he didn't read the legislation. I guess there's no attention to detail. If you read the legislation, these caucuses can absolutely spend money during the primary. They have to have it written into their bylaws. They have, unless it's written, and right now there are no bylaws because these are brand new committees. So here's the way it is. So Nelson Dollar, if he runs, this is just an example. So Nelson, this is not directed at you. It's just you happen to be there. Well, let's just say Representative John Doe is running. He happens to be from Southern Kerry, and he has kind of a moderate to left-leaning record. And he's in the House, and he's very powerful. And the caucus has tons of money. If a conservative challenger comes into the mix to challenge that person, unless it's written into the bylaws, because it's certainly not written into the law, and Dallas didn't tell you that, the executive director kind of glossed that one over because it's a detail, and there's not going to be a lot of attention to detail in this. You have to read it, and they didn't read it, and he didn't read it. So they could spend the money in the primary. They could. So they could use Republican House caucus money to take out conservatives. They could use it to take out John Blust. They could use it to take out Chris Millis. They could use that money to take out anyone by state law if McCrory signs it, if the governor signs it. That money can absolutely be used to rid our state of conservative Republicans and bypass the party completely. And Dallas Woodhouse agrees with it, the executive director, the new executive director. But you don't usually see executive directors making policy statements like that. Their general role is to kind of run the party operations. But this is going to be a new, I don't know, if the party, what it's intending to do. This is bad. Okay, and what's funny is, you know, only on a show like this, only where insiders and activists and legislators from all sides. Now, the left is going to come unglued. They already are. They already knew this was bad. I don't think they're going to like any of this. It's going to be funny because they're going to talk about power and corruption, and they're going to lay it at the feet of the Republicans rather than 15 years ago. It used to be the other way around. Now, hidden amongst this sadness is that latent racism that you're hearing more and more. I mean, I was on a TV interview today, and the Democrat, I tell you what, we're going to take a break. It's going to be on TV tonight. Definitely we'll talk about this. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Talk about more about this and also get to the good, the bad, and the ugly. We have Plot Hound with us today. We have Lady Liberty with us today. Your calls, if you want to be a part of things, 919-747-9421, 919-747-9421. If any of this, I don't know, maybe it bothers you, maybe it doesn't. Don't know. But last night, Facebook, hilarious, sad. Much more to talk about here. Stay tuned.
Are North Carolina conservatives outnumbered by the left? The establishment media would have you believe that North Carolina is a solidly blue state, but the truth is that most voters identify as conservative. Thankfully, the Civitas Institute has the facts when it comes to what North Carolinians really believe. Civitas is the only organization in the state that conducts monthly live caller public opinion polling. Every month, live callers ask 600 likely voters what they think about their elected leaders, public policy issues, and the most pressing issues of the day. Want to see what your fellow citizens think? Join the Civitas Institute for one of our upcoming poll launch events. The next event will be in Wilmington on October 7th, then in Raleigh on October 8th. Visit nccivitas.org/events to learn more and register. These events always sell out, so make sure you get your tickets today at nccivitas.org/events or call 919-747-8068.
Conservatism in America is said to be as old as the Republic itself. But what are its foundational principles, and how did they form the modern conservative movement? Join Civitas Wednesday, October 14th at the Dilworth Neighborhood Grill in Charlotte for a special book signing event with Conservative Heroes author Garland Tucker. Hear the story of 14 champions of conservative thought, some well-known, others hardly remembered. It's an exciting tour from the founding of America to the modern age. Author Garland S. Tucker III traces the development of the basic tenets of conservatism and shows how leaders put principle into action. Purchase your tickets now by going to nccivitas.org and clicking on events. They're selling out fast, so don't miss the chance to be a part of the conservative discussion. Again, that's nccivitas.org/events for tickets.
I love those smooth transitions. Some other stuff. By the way, this caucus stuff, remember, Nelson Dollar is a consultant. So he's in the caucus. They probably get to pick who leads the caucus political group, and then they can pay Nelson. It's a great moneymaker for him. A fantastic moneymaker for him. And there's a new affiliated political committee. So today I'm on. You'll see it tonight if you have Time Warner Cable, and if you're listening on the podcast, I'm sorry, you probably missed the broadcast. We appreciate you listening on the podcast. Thank you so much. And we also appreciate you folks that stream this in other hours. Maybe you listen in the morning, whatever. But I taped a segment for News 14 Carolina where we kind of did a brief overview of the last week or so of the legislative session. And I hate to agree with Democrats. I'm not agreeing with them on policy. What I am agreeing with them is about power and about kind of inappropriate sausage making. And the gentleman was Malcolm Graham. He's a former North Carolina state senator from Mecklenburg County. And just a super, super, you know, it was fun. I mean, I disagree with just a very liberal guy. And I'm very conservative, obviously, and unabashedly so. But when we were talking about this, the left is paying attention. I know it looks like it's happening in a vacuum. But the leading and the playing of Hassan Harnett, the NCGOP grassroots black chairman, being led to slaughter. It's interesting, the move, how all of a sudden Dallas is the front person, Hassan's kind of there in the background. Make no mistake, rather than figuring out how to work a team, it looks like they're moving against the chairman. And Malcolm Graham picked up on this too. The Democrats are paying attention to what's happening in this. And it would appear, I don't want it to believe, I mean, it could be that it's just not working out, but there becomes this appearance. And sometimes a friend of mine, a former middle school principal from Wilson, wrote a really interesting, the book was interesting. It's a lot of collection stories, but it's the title of the book was, "It Doesn't Matter What You Did. It Matters What the Little Old Ladies in the Church Said You Did." And that's where you're getting, you know, whether or not it's true, it has the appearance of being true. And that's the optics of what's happening within the Republican Party are not good right now. And their actions, certainly not necessarily good. Now, some other insider news that's out there, I don't know, you know. So what's happening is, so we know now also, before we get to the bottom of the hour, Skip Stam, a multi-term legislator known to be very socially conservative, was a guest on this show, has fought against gambling, fought against abortion. He's a very socially conservative guy. He announced last night in the wee hours, a little after 4 a.m., that he was not going to be seeking re-election. I mean, the I don't know. Skip is a pretty, he's a decent guy. He's a really good guy. He's been a great champion for charter schools. And even when I've disagreed with him, nice guy. And it's certainly, you know, worked very hard, very ethical guy. It looks like there may be six more GOP folks that will not be running for re-election. Now, that's news you're not hearing anywhere else. And one of them's supposed to be a pretty big deal. Don't know who it is, but what I'm hearing from a very, very reliable source, this session, when you run for 8 or 9 months, it puts strain on you. I mean, there's some people that'll probably be able to pull 30 or 40,000 out of it this year because they stayed so long and they get that per diem money and some other things. But the strain on you as a younger member of that General Assembly is tough. So I strongly suspect some people had a reality check in the General Assembly, probably not going to run for re-election. Don't know what's going to happen there. But maybe they'll be able to take caucus money, and then they'll be able to give Jason Sane some more money so he can replace some of those $19,000 suits when they get like 9 months old. Maybe that's why they set up these political committees. Maybe that's why Dallas wanted to give them cover so that Jason Sane can have more suits, more nice clothing for Jason Sane. Because the party probably wasn't going to give him money for that. But you know what? These new affiliated political committees with unlimited funds could. So the solar lobby could buy Jason Sane some suits to absorb solar energy. And then the suits could provide a workout. And then he could keep his shape more, which is what he said was the problem. Just saying. So, anyway. When you look at this, so the Democrats are paying attention. The Democrats could turn a lot of this, this is where the folks inside that building just don't see the optics from outside the building. And the people that are insiders, and I don't consider, well, maybe you could consider people on this show insiders. Certainly the people that pay attention from a policy standpoint, from a what does this mean standpoint, from the unintended consequences standpoint, when we're looking at this, we're like, what the hell are they thinking? And then the vast majority of North Carolinians just don't pay attention. They hear in the news while they're eating dinner or waiting for the Carolina Panthers game Sunday. They're like, I wonder what's going on in Raleigh. Huh. See, that's where you get into kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it will go through that. Now, I've got my list here. Got my list of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we'll try to get to that. Because we have Paul Chester will be calling in shortly, Carolina Plothound. And at the 4 o'clock, probably in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll go through the good, the bad, and the ugly, because there were many things. There were some really good things that happened. It could have happened sooner. Basically, your job, if I hire Lisa to be a producer, and she has, and we do a two-hour show every day, she does the two-hour show. If she can't be here, we have to make sure it can be done. That's her job. If she takes 2 hours to put the show together, you know, fine. But I mean, if she doesn't show up, the show doesn't go on, it's a failure. The legislative job is mainly, number one thing, do the budget. When you gavel the session, here you call the session to order, night, whatever. You call it into order, your job is to get the budget done. They didn't get it done until almost October 1st.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to need until December 1st to get the next show.
Yeah.
Just wanted to tell you that.
Yeah. And get this, and this is what's funny, Lisa. In theory, the way the legislature works, if you didn't get the show done on time, we would pay you more money.
Oh, yeah. I was going to tell you I needed more money to get tomorrow's show on by December.
You get more money by not getting your job done.
Yeah, I wanted to let you know.
Imagine
that. Yeah.
So if you went to McDonald's and you went through the drive-thru and you didn't get your fries, they pulled you over to the curb and you paid them a bonus to get your fries late and cold.
And cold. Which is typical.
So that's what happened. They didn't get it done on time. They just didn't act, you know, they had an opportunity to lead. And it's interesting to see the difference in leadership between Tom Tillis and Speaker Tim Moore. Regardless of what you think of the politics of Tom Tillis, he got crap done on time with a budget. And they had a deficit they had to fill. Tim Moore had tons of money, boatloads of extra money, and they still couldn't pull off. It's a difference in leadership style, a profound difference. But we'll talk a little bit more about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Paul Chester from Carolina Plothound, A.P. Dillon, LadyLiberty1885.com, also be on the show later. And your phone calls, if you want to, 919-747-9421. I got to get that chat room up and going. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay tuned.
Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. Your raincoat will definitely be your new best friend for about 4 or 5 more days. Another 5 to 10 inches of rain expected to fall across central North Carolina from today through Sunday morning. News 14 is reporting the heaviest rain likely to fall Friday and Saturday. Now, that's partly due to Hurricane Joaquin. The storm has strengthened from a tropical storm to a Category 1 hurricane. That happened this morning. Now, slowly drifting also to the southwest near the Bahamas. By Friday, the storm should turn to the north and pick up some speed. Right now, it's tracking near or just off the coast of North Carolina through the weekend. During that time, it could become as strong as a Category 2 or maybe even stronger. Could be a 3 or 4. The exact track of the storm remains uncertain at this time. Many models have kept the storm just off the Carolina coast, depending on the lows that are coming in. However, some of the latest models into the forecast center suggest the storm could track even closer to the coast, potentially brushing the Outer Banks and making landfall anywhere from northeastern North Carolina to the Jersey Shore. So, keep an eye on this storm. It really could affect parts of North Carolina, especially with all the rain we've had lately. Big trees could come down if we have some strong winds and with a lot more rain, because we're looking at a lot of rain across most of the state. Businesses were evacuated and traffic was blocked off along Highway 301 and Dunn this morning after a vapor leak was reported at a chemical plant. Brainerd Chemical's president happened to be on site and told WTVD the leak occurred during the unloading of a bulk tanker truck that was filled with hydrochloric acid. The vapor cloud formed after about 30 minutes because of a leaky gasket on top of the stationary tank the chemical was being pumped into. Firefighters gave the all clear after the vapor cloud moved north and dissipated. NC State football player Shadrack Thornton has had another brush with the law. This time he allegedly struck a man with his moped while driving on the sidewalk near campus. The victim had to get stitches after being knocked down an embankment. Thornton was arrested at his home and charged with failing to give aid to an injured person and failure to provide information. He has a court date at the end of October on previous charges of driving the moped without a helmet and exceeding a safe speed. He also has a past criminal record. Thornton practiced this morning for the Wolfpack. Team officials have not released a statement regarding potential punishment from Tuesday's incident. Billy Graham has released what could be his last book. WREL reports his son Franklin, president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, says, "Where I Am, Heaven, Eternity, and Our Life Beyond took 2 years to complete." He says at 96, his father has problems seeing, hearing, and walking, but his mind is still clear, and he keeps up with world events. If you thought your commute was tough today, be thankful it didn't involve hundreds of thousands of bees. Yes, you heard that right. Hundreds of thousands of bees. Fox News Radio's Jeff Manasso has the details.
This is the sound from inside Garvin County Sheriff's Deputy Carl Zink's cruiser yesterday. It was covered with tens of thousands of bees after a truck carrying upwards of 1 million honeybees overturned on southbound I-35 south of Oklahoma City. Dozens of crates carrying bees broke open. We're told only a couple of people, including the deputy, suffered minor bee stings. And traffic was backed up for miles as beekeepers worked to capture as many as possible. No word on what caused the big rig to crash. In Chicago, Jeff Manasso, Fox News Radio.
He will be back for the 2016 session, but he's not going to be running for re-election to the State House. Representative Paul Skip Stam made the surprise announcement just before lawmakers gaveled out after an extra-long session that ended at 4:18 this morning. The 65-year-old is an 8-term veteran of the chamber and is a lawyer from Apex. And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now back to more of what matters with Chad Adams.
Hello, hello, hello. Oh, what a beautiful rainy drizzly. Get ready for more rain day weekend. Joaquin. I do not think he's a documented worker. I don't think. You know, I don't think Joaquin is documented. Trying to make his way into the coast. I don't know which state, you know,
He's trying to get visa status.
This undocumented, by the way, hurricanes, great creators of economic activity.
Definitely. You
know, they destroy things, and every act of destruction creates lots of economic activity. I guess it's an incentive of its own, you know, a non-government funded incentive. Hurricanes come, they destroy things, lots of building activity and economic activity takes place, jobs get created. Mm-hmm. The act of destruction. Now with us, he is named Paul Chester. He runs the CarolinaPlotHound.com news aggregator site. You can find out anything and everything about what's happening in North Carolina if you go check it out. Paul, welcome to the show. How the heck are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Now, you didn't stay up late last night, did you?
Well, maybe a little late for me, but not as late as the General Assembly.
So you didn't stay up all night waiting on bated breath for all the wonderful things that they might bring and give to us in the form of new laws?
I didn't stay up until 4:18 this morning, now.
Neither did I. I didn't. I don't know why they did.
It looks like I looked at a couple of the votes. It looks like some of the legislators didn't either. It looks like there's maybe 20 or so of them missing.
Well, they were playing football and singing. I was reading some of the stories. You know, some people were singing Shaft.
Did you see Jerry Tillman singing with Mike Woodard?
I did not. I know Woodard well. Great JC, Democrat, but a great, yeah. I knew him for years.
They were singing. News and Observer has a video of them singing Long Black Veil together.
I did not. I saw that Greer Martin, a Democrat, and John Blust, Republican, were singing Shaft. So
Shaft.
Yeah, okay. Shaft, you know, from the 70s. I think Lisa probably knows that one well. She's nodding her head over there. So tell, you know, I don't even know where to kind of begin, but, you know, as we're watching this, I know a few of us were texting back and forth last night, and we were in a group text, as it were. And so
you didn't notice that I had gone silent there?
No, I was too busy ranting, I guess. No, I was doing mini rants last night. But
I usually keep my phone on my nightstand at night, and I had to go put it in the other room because it kept
bing, bing, bing. Just turn it on silent. Just turn it down. So what do you make of what's your take on the last, let's just say, post-budget? I mean, we'll talk about a few of the links that you've got up, but what's your take on what happened?
Well, it was too long. It was too liberal. It was, you could not, you know, if you're a conservative, principled, limited government, free market, conservative, whether you're, do a website like me or do a talk show like you or in a public policy organization like Civitas, or you're an activist group like AFT, or just a grassroots activist, you could not take your eye off of the General Assembly and the governor this session. It was exhausting. I mean, you just could not, you can't send lawmakers, regardless of party, to the state capitol or to Washington, D.C., and then just trust that they'll do the right thing if you're a believer in limited government. It's just, you just cannot, if you want to have a good government practices, there is just too much money being thrown around. I'm not a kind of person who says, oh, we got to take money out of politics, because I think that is a form of speech, but you just cannot ever become disengaged if you want to see good government and limited government be exercised.
See, I've never understood. There are parts about the entire process. I don't mind money in politics. It doesn't bother me whatsoever because it's a great, because liberals can give it, conservatives can give it. My problem is the way the shadow organizations get created, the way third party things get coordinated, because of bad federal law, then we end up with bad legislative laws as well. Unlimited donations, just let me know who you are. If Paul Chester wants to go give $1 million to a given candidate because he thinks they're the most wonderful thing in the world, then Paul Chester made a donation of $1 million to insert name. I don't have a problem with that. But when we get into, the way we do things now with these 504, these C4s and everything where you get unlimited money and it's issue oriented, you're not telling people to vote for, but you're using it to destroy a candidate, left or right, and you don't know who's doing it. That's bad to me. But this crazy unlimited stuff, the way they're doing it, if they would just say, hey, unlimited donations to candidates, just let me know who you are.
Well, you're always going to have bad actors or not above board actors in the process. And those actors are going to draw resources, and they're going to put those resources to use to gain advantages, to tilt the playing field in their favor. And regardless of how you change the laws, we've changed the election laws, both state level and federal, multiple times in history. And, you know, that is always going to be, you know, somebody's always going to find a loophole or a different kind of group, a 527 group or a special kind of pack or whatever to work through. And so basically those of us who, you know, complain about these things, you know, left and right, okay, here's the rules. Let's use those rules to our advantage. And, you know, it's time to, you know, like for the free market grassroots who just rant and rave over the establishment and such, so forth. What else are you going to do? You worked through the party mechanism. You worked through the NCGOP. You got the establishment candidate defeated, but you had ended up with your fallback or the candidate that you weren't really crazy about. It's just who you were left with in Hassan Harnett. And, you know, now you see what's happening. The establishment is just working through these alternate mechanisms or creating these things at the last minute to gain their advantage back or to gain their power back or to preserve it. So, you know, there are other mechanisms, you know, but the grassroots have to get organized. They have to coalesce around leaders, candidates, raise money. You know, they have to do the hard work like they do.
Exactly. I agree. I completely agree. I think that was a great opportunity when Hassan Harnett got, okay, so the establishment goes, okay, the grassroots people didn't want our guy. Okay, we get the message. Let's go figure out what that message is, and let's work to establish it, because clearly they want something conservative, so let's work with them. Let's try to figure out a way. They didn't. They decided to figure out a way to divorce themselves even further and entrench themselves and drive that wedge deeper, further into the party. And it's funny because, you know, you're watching. And though they're going to need, the funny thing, I think you said something very germane, which is that the grassroots essentially get accused of not raising a lot of money and not being very organized. I think that's a fair criticism. The criticism of the establishment is they don't really care about grassroots. They think you ought to kiss the ring. Kiss the ring. We know what's good for you. But they need each other. I mean, it's funny because there is a lot of money. Establishment has money, and the grassroots, but they can't win elections without grassroots people knocking on doors and making phone calls. And if they think they're going to walk to victory next year easily without the grassroots, they're going to be sitting in the minority on the back bench next year.
Yeah, well, you're right, but I have not seen any evidence that the establishment will cater to the grassroots unless they know that it is going to, you know, significantly impact them in the immediate term. I don't think they look at long term. I think they just look at preserving their power, you know, cater to the grassroots or to the social conservatives or what have you to get them on board for your particular, for a moment. You know, a lot of them think that, you know, everybody will show up and vote for the R at the ballot box anyway, which off, you know, to a large degree does. But, you know, there's been now a enough of a track record here over the last several years, both at the federal level and the state level, where grassroots have been dismissed, social conservatives have been dismissed, and, you know, they're not thinking anymore. You see it in the resignation of John Boehner. I mean, the opposition to John Boehner was only 40 in the caucus, but it was significant enough and passionate enough to get him to resign. I wonder what the state of the state party is and when that message will resonate with the establishment leadership here. But does it matter? Let's say we could get hypothetically that Tim Morrow could be forced to resign or something like that. You know, the establishment, again, would just, like they did with the party leadership and the party structure, they would find another way or try to look for another way to tilt the playing field in their favor and continue on.
Well, no doubt. I mean, it's just an interesting dynamic. I don't know how it's going to play out, But you know, when I look at this, we're going till 4 o'clock in the morning, and here's the funny thing: there was no reason they couldn't have just stopped like they do on a normal day and come back today. There was no reason to keep people till 4 o'clock. There was nothing special about, from what I can tell, from any kind of legal, constitutional, there was no apparent reason for them to be singing and dancing and playing football in the halls of the General Assembly till 4 a.m. last night. Am I missing something?
Of course you're right, but it's been done before. I mean, you know, they want to get out of there. They want to get it over with, I guess. You know, I don't, there are a lot worse things. The biggest thing is, okay, these guys are fatigued and they just want to get out of there, and they'll probably vote for anything, you know, just ask Jeff Tart. But, you know, there's just so much bad stuff that went down and in this session that, you know, to get all over the, you know, they stayed up till 4 a.m. deal. I mean, there's a piece I've got linked up by Triad Conservative. It's a little bit ways down on the left-hand side of Plot Hound, but, you know, he talks about what happened in this session. And the title of his piece is "The Year the Raleigh Republican Revolution Ended." And he points to increased spending, incentives for film, historic preservation tax credits, no change in certificate of need, the large bond package, new state agencies being created, sales tax increase. He talks about, he's been writing a lot about Medicaid reform, which he thinks is socialist and statist. But so all these things, and we've talked about a lot of other things as well, is, you know, where is the conservative revolution? Again, you can't just send legislators to Raleigh or to Washington, D.C. anymore and just, you know, put it on autopilot for 2 years and come back and see how they've done. You've got to watch them every single day. And that's, you know, there were some things that did turn and get straightened out. You know, you and I talked every single week about the solar incentives and how every week they were trying to find a different way to preserve their the solar tax credit that benefited big corporations like Blue Cross and Blue Shield and Bank of America and other big corporations. And that did not pass. That did not get through. So, you know, again, if we have enough people watching it and pointing it out and raising hell about it, but you can't just let up. And the other thing is, okay, again, like I said earlier, we've had the playing field change as far as the politics and the money and these associated party committees. Okay, you know, the party has been withering for years now, both the Democrat and the Republican parties. Grassroots, it's time to, you know, coalesce, organize, raise money, do your thing, and you know, basically defeat them. You know, that's always the answer to any of this stuff, is to defeat your opposition. If you're not happy with what they're doing, then you got to go out and defeat them.
No doubt. I want to turn our attention to another one. If incentives are just kind of this creepy, crawly thing that Republicans, I don't know what happened, something creeps in the back of their brain, they say, and all of a sudden it takes over and says, free markets don't work, we need incentives, and they start believing it and spouting it like something out of a bad sci-fi movie. But you've got a link to the piece over at WECT in Wilmington about John Scavarla, the Commerce Secretary that's going down there. You know, he's there to do a couple things at the airport and some other things, but then he made a statement that seemed rather odd. You and I both know that if North Carolina were blown off the planet Earth, the film industry would still be there. You know, whether or not the industry gets money from the taxpayers of North Carolina involuntarily, we give it to them voluntarily when we go to the movies. That's how they earn our money. But the state of North Carolina believes that the multi-billion-dollar industry, yet another one, in addition to solar, can't survive without incentives. Kind of go through what he said in the story, if you can.
Well, he was there for other manufacturing, you know, support and that kind of thing. But, you know, he talked about the film incentives, and that was one of the things that appalled you and I and Civitas, and that got stuck into the budget at the last minute, but almost the last minute. And that came out of nowhere. We, in the previous section, we had thought that those were pretty much gone away. It had been reduced down to like 10 million over 2 years, right?
On the way of the dinosaur.
Right. And all of a sudden there's 30 million back in the budget and it passed. And so that they have the film office and the Department of Commerce has $30 million to give away to Hollywood companies. And Scarla said, he said that basically it's essential for the film industry if they're going to keep it in North Carolina. He said 30 is better than 10. In other words, 30 million is better than 10 million. And we're just going to have to continue to work on the mechanism by which we use to recruit film to the state. It's got to be a combination of quality of workforce, location, and incentives. Incentives are a material part of the package. Basically, he's saying we've got to have the incentives or else because workforce and location, okay, there's some infrastructure down there in Wilmington. There's some attractive parts of the state that work as good locations, but it's really about the incentives. That's what the film industry has become. It just become exactly like the wind industry, the solar industry. They go shopping around from state to state to see where the best incentives are. When the states get fed up with it or see that it's not paying off, Michigan shut theirs down. Okay, right. So they're not in Michigan anymore. So basically, the film industry and the TV industry are mobile. They'll go wherever they can get the best tax deal. So, as long as they know they can play states off each other, that's what they're going to keep doing. And that's why Scavarla said, okay, we've got $30 million here, and we've just got to keep improving this mechanism, which means keep feeding the beast.
Our guest is Paul Chester from the CarolinaPlotHound.com. You can go there and check everything out. Paul, look at this. You and I both had a good chuckle yesterday when Senator Jeff Tarte pops up on Twitter. I mean, this is weird because Twitter is something you have to either do it every day because it's a habit, or you have to make yourself go and write something that you think is interesting that other people might want to read. So he went out of his way to post something on Twitter that basically was channeling Nancy Pelosi. We talked about it briefly on the show. What's your take on this? I would think that people would just think, I mean, if you're a rank and file conservative, you're thinking, why would a Republican write the kind of stuff that Jeff Tarte wrote yesterday?
Yes. We've had a few things up about Jeff Tarte this session and where he's gotten sort of ambushed with the videos and stuff. But, he said in his tweet, he said, as session finishes today, we need a couple of weeks of detailed reading to know everything we passed in the last 2 weeks.
He's voting on, he has no idea what he's voting on.
Yeah, they don't know what they're voting on. I mean, it's pretty clear what he's, that's even more clear than what Pelosi said, because Pelosi said, and Pelosi had that famous quote, we need to pass Obamacare, so that she said that so you can find out what's in it. She didn't say so that she can find out what's in it, but that's basically how it was taken. This is more clear from Tarte. He's basically saying, I've read everything. We passed all this stuff, so we need a couple of weeks to find out what we've passed, which is appalling. It was a perfect definitive quote for the end of session, though. I mean,
yes, it was.
It was bad, but it defines this legislature. It defines this House at the very least. Well, he's a senator, so they went through both chambers, so it defines them both.
What do you make? They asked me this on air. I'll ask you. So I'm on air, and Tim Boy, by the way, we're going to have Loretta Beniti with us from News 14 Carolina. Tim's going to the Mouse House down in Florida for a little while. Tim said, so how would you grade this legislative session? Now, I'll ask you that. I'll answer. I think I'll recall what my answer was. But what would you say? Well, if you were grading it, what would you call it?
I don't like those questions.
we'll see, but you're on air. I don't have a choice. I had to answer it. You're on air. You have to answer it. You're compelled
to.
You'll be held in contempt of radio.
I'll go back to Triad Conservative Joe Garino, who's a doctor out of Greensboro, and I listed out those things that were negatives. There was some good social conservative measures. They defunded Planned Parenthood. There were some pro-life measures. There was some immigration stuff. I guess a D. But I really feel like that's just an off the top of my head grade, and it was really funny because
I think I graded it a C minus, and the Democrat graded it a D. I think I did. I may have said C, but I may have said C minus. Wasn't a C plus. Because there were, you know,
we're agreeing with Democrats.
I know we're terrible. What's funny is, as I made the distinction earlier in the show, I'm not agreeing with them on policy. I'm agreeing with them on actions related to power grabs and going too long, not getting stuff done, and acting in their own self interest rather than interest of taxpayers. Mm-hmm. It's funny that they didn't go after them. I mean, he was going after them for, why are you doing this? You know, why do we need these political action parties, these affiliated political committees? I mean, he was saying the same things. I think they're legitimate questions that people from both sides of the aisle go, what are you doing? And that means it's about power and greed.
Right. Well, at the same time, you can look at the budget votes and see that there were a significant number of Democrats who voted for the budget, which tells you they were not as conservative as they could have been. And that's the problem with, the majority of the Republicans or the majority of the caucuses, is that they don't, when it comes down to the bottom line, they don't trust the market. They don't trust that the market will, you know, of course the market's not perfect. They don't trust that consumers can make the best choices for themselves, that getting government out of the way will still keep us in a clean environment, in a prosperous economy. They do not trust that. They think that the hand of government has to intervene, and that goes especially for our governor. He thinks we need to have bonds. He thinks we need to have incentives. We need to have these historical tax credits. We need all this corporate welfare. And that's so when they say they're conservative, they believe in that the market should dictate things, they really don't believe that. They're just feeding you a line.
Well, we will have the governor on this very show tomorrow, I think in this time slot, 3:30 tomorrow. Governor Pat McCrory is supposed to be on air with us, and it'll be interesting. I look forward to it.
Listening.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be listening. I'm sure some of his staff members will be listening. And they're listening right now, as a matter of fact. We know they are.
To see if they'll want to have him on again.
Well, maybe. But, he was a weekly guest. And since becoming governor, he's been more difficult to get a hold of. But, obviously, look, things change. You get busy. And we understand that. We appreciate him taking the time to be a part of the show. Hopefully after things die down, tomorrow should be a better day for him. So we're looking forward to that. Now, anything else you have concerns? I mean, obviously there's a lot out there. I mean, you've got John Hood's column out there about party disunity. You've got deer farming. You know, it's amazing. All the hunters last week, there were columns and pieces written that the deer farming bill was dead. They were done. They were celebrating. They were cheering in the streets and firing their 357s. Or no, they were using rifles there. They were firing their guns in the air. But no, they actually, now we have deer farming. We're going to have deer farming.
Again, something that you thought, everybody thought was dead, gone, not going to be, passed in this session, was stuck in at the last minute. The powerful gun lobby, you know, Grassroots NC is a very strong group, and they can garner their supporters to make phone calls in a heartbeat. They did not win on that one. And so they're very upset, and they say that they're going to start targeting what they call rhinos and in the next election cycle over this deer farming thing. So that's, it'll be interesting to see the coalitions that form and the politics that plays out, because we've got a candidate filing that's coming up very soon, within the next couple months. It's got to be done before Christmas, and then we're going to have a quick primary campaign season.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Paul Chesser, CarolinaPlotHound.com. Appreciate you being a part of the program.
All right, always good to be with you.
We have so much more. Hour two getting ready to be underway here, and then we'll in the bottom of this hour, we'll be joined by Ms. A.P. Dillon. She, LadyLiberty1885.com. A very prescient blog out there, and we look forward to having her on the show. Stay tuned right here, What Matters with Chad Adams.
For Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. Your raincoat will definitely be your new best friend for about 4 or 5 more days. Another 5 to 10 inches of rain expected to fall across central North Carolina from today through Sunday morning. News 14 is reporting the heaviest rain likely to fall Friday and Saturday. Now, that's partly due to Hurricane Joaquin. The storm is strengthened from a tropical storm to a Category 1 hurricane. That happened this morning. Now, it's slowly drifting also to the southwest near the Bahamas. By Friday, the storm should turn to the north and pick up some speed. Right now, it's tracking near or just off the coast of North Carolina through the weekend. During that time, it could become as strong as a Category 2 or maybe even stronger. Could be a 3 or 4. The exact track of the storm remains uncertain at this time. Many models have kept the storm just off the Carolina coast, depending on the lows that are coming in. However, some of the latest models into the forecast center suggest the storm could track even closer to the coast, potentially brushing the Outer Banks and making landfall anywhere from northeastern North Carolina to the Jersey Shore. So keep an eye on this storm. It really could affect parts of North Carolina, especially with all the rain we've had lately. Big trees could come down if we have some strong winds and with a lot more rain, because we're looking at a lot of rain across most of the state. Businesses were evacuated and traffic was blocked off along Highway 301 and Dunn this morning after a vapor leak was reported at a chemical plant. Brainerd Chemical's president happened to be on site and told WTVD the leak occurred during the unloading of a bulk tanker truck that was filled with hydrochloric acid. The vapor cloud formed after about 30 minutes because of a leaky gasket on top of the stationary tank the chemical was being pumped into. Firefighters gave the all clear after the vapor cloud moved north and dissipated. NC State football player Shadrack Thornton has had another brush with the law. This time he allegedly struck a man with his moped while driving on the sidewalk near campus. The victim had to get stitches after being knocked down an embankment. Thornton was arrested at his home and charged with failing to give aid to an injured person and failure to provide information. He has a court date at the end of October on previous charges of driving the moped without a helmet and exceeding a safe speed. He also has a past criminal record. Thornton practiced this morning for the Wolfpack. Team officials have not released a statement regarding potential punishment from Tuesday's incident. Billy Graham has released what could be his last book. WREL reports his son Franklin, president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, says, "Where I Am, Heaven, Eternity, and Our Life Beyond took 2 years to complete." He says at 96, his father has problems seeing, hearing, and walking, but his mind is still clear, and he keeps up with world events. If you thought your commute was tough today, be thankful it didn't involve hundreds of thousands of bees. Yes, you heard that right. Hundreds of thousands of bees. Fox News Radio's Jeff Manasso has the details.
This is the sound from inside Garvin County Sheriff's Deputy Carl Zink's cruiser yesterday. It was covered with tens of thousands of bees after a truck carrying upwards of 1 million honeybees overturned on southbound I-35 south of Oklahoma City. Dozens of crates carrying bees broke open. We're told only a couple of people, including the deputy, suffered minor bee stings. And traffic was backed up for miles as beekeepers worked to capture as many as possible. No word on what caused the big rig to crash. In Chicago, Jeff Manasso, Fox News Radio.
He will be back for the 2016 session, but he's not going to be running for re-election to the State House. Representative Paul Skip Stam made the surprise announcement just before lawmakers gaveled out after an extra-long session that ended at 4:18 this morning. The 65-year-old is an 8-term veteran of the chamber and is a lawyer from Apex. And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now back to more of what matters with Chad Adams.
And welcome back. I'm just reviewing. It's funny. Yesterday I was kind of having fun with the TSA. Every time I travel, and I found another one of the tags. So they give you this really neat notice of baggage inspection where they go through your stuff. What's really sad is they also give it to you in Spanish. Aviso de inspección de equipaje. So they let you know in English and Spanish, they went through your bag. Hey, there's something in my bag I didn't pack. And so I have like a collection of them. Every time I go, keep them. So I have a collection. I may make a deck of cards out of these things eventually.
Yeah. Illegal search and seizure. Irrelevant. I'm a danger. Gotta go through his bag. So, anyway, a lot of people using the phrase plutocrat to describe what's going on. I've heard it's not just one or two people in the chat room. For weeks, text messages. I get it on Facebook messages. I get emails. It's in the chat room. And people are like, just call them plutocrats. Just call them plutocrats. Just call them. And it basically is when a society is ruled or controlled by a small minority of the wealthiest people. Now, the left has wanted to say that we're in, you know, kind of this plutocracy for some time. But it's not, you know, it's not democracy. It's not capitalism. It's not socialism. It's not rooted in an established political philosophy. It is advocated by the wealthy classes of a society in an indirect or surreptitious fashion through the term, though the term itself is almost always used in a pejorative. Anyway, it's not something, yeah, you don't take lightly. And most people, if I say plutocrat, they're not going to know. It's like if I say, and I said this to someone just a few minutes ago in a text message, you know, hey, if I call them socialist, if you're under the age of 40, that's almost a term of endearment. I mean, people under the age of 40 aren't really concerned about socialist. Socialist? That's great. Someday I want to be one. I'm going to run the world. As long as I run it, it's good. If anyone else runs it, no, not so good. But that doesn't bother people like it should. Now, we will be having AP Dillon, Lady Liberty, 1885. We have a call. Who do we have on the line there, Miss Lisa?
We have David from Mooresville, and he has a couple of things he wants you to ask the governor.
Oh no, David! Welcome to the show. How are you, man?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Thank you for calling. Are you from Mooresville or Mooresville?
No, Mooresville.
Near Charlotte. Mooresville. Okay, you're not too far from Charlotte then.
Wait, right? We're on Lake Norman.
That's right. Race country.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So what's up, man?
What's up? Well, Governor's supposed to be on your show tomorrow.
Yes.
I'd like you to ask him why he's ignoring the interests of all the citizens of the Lake Norman, Charlotte area by forcing this toll road company to put in toll lanes on Lake Norman, which isn't going to help at all as far as the congestion and actually through DOT's efforts, the congestion on I-77 is just absolutely horrible and getting worse. Why is the governor, rather than representing the citizens he's supposed to be representing, ignoring the local government agencies and the numerous citizens? I think there's a citizen group with over 4,000 members that have tried to get him to step back and take a look at that, and he just is unwilling to do that.
Well, I mean, I think the legislature hasn't really taken a stand on that either, have they? I mean, you're talking about the I-77 toll road, you know, the way.
Right,
and
it's not
a conventional toll road as many people in the central part of the state know it, which is just a road that you pay tolls if you choose to go on it. The toll road that you're talking about, from my understanding, is it's a lane that would be a toll lane, and it wouldn't help the capacity because if you drive in that lane, you get charged. Otherwise, you don't. It's kind of a strange toll road. Is that correct?
Right. That is correct.
And it's a Spanish company. It's a company from Spain that has the contract, correct?
Right. And it's supposedly a lot of legal questions about bankruptcies on things they've done in the past, on other toll roads they've done in the past. You know, what they're proposing is just horrible. It's to take away one of the lanes that's available for a multi-passenger and turn it into a toll road. And this does nothing to help it. Plus, there'll be no exits for cities like Cornelius and Huntersville. There's no way for them to exit from this toll road. The community is up in arms about it. Local governments are up in arms about it. Citizens are up in arms about it. People have tried to talk. There's all kinds of protests, signs, flags. A group has gone to Raleigh, tried to lobby with Raleigh to try to get something done about this. And it seems like our government is just not listening to its citizens.
Well, what's the response you've had from the governor's office thus far?
Nothing. They've been just ignoring us and going to continue with the plan to do the toll lanes.
Well, go ahead.
There are numerous stories that have been published in the Charlotte area about this company donating money to the governor's election campaign, which looks like he's being paid off. I don't know whether there's any truth to that or not, But it certainly implies some impropriety there if it is true. Unfortunately, once they sign that contract, there's a 50-year commitment to it, that we can't do anything with I-77 for 50 years, that this company would have to do that, which is absolutely ridiculous. So it's financially, it's going to be a hardship on the citizens. It's going to be a hardship on businesses. They won't have access to and from the toll lanes. A good example of the government officials not listening to the voters.
In fact, there's a website called charlotteagenda.com that's got some interesting facts about the toll road stuff listed point by point by point.
Yeah, there's an exit, another group called Exit 2023 Ridiculousness, and there are over 4,000 members in that group.
Wow.
So you would think the government would begin to get the message, but is he just ignoring us, or is he being bought off?
Well,
I'm not sure which is true.
Well, I this is a very, very contentious issue, no doubt. And down in the Cornelius area, which is also, you know, Tom Tillis's area, the senator from North Carolina. He's intimately connected with this as well, is he not?
Yes, and he supposedly has tried to do something to get us some relief. But my understanding is we haven't got any relief at all, and they still plan to go ahead with it, which is absolutely ridiculous. There's also supposedly a lawsuit pending about this.
And what do you make of Jeff Tart, the senator from that area? We were talking about Jeff Tart earlier, who just passed a bunch of legislation. He said he doesn't know what he passed. He said he's going to take weeks to read it. But how has his responsiveness been? He's former mayor of Cornelius.
Yeah, I know he's been involved, but I don't see him getting anything done.
Okay.
I don't see anybody standing up for the citizens of the Lake Norman area.
Well, any other questions you'd like to ask?
No. Why won't the governor listen to the citizens? And is there, in truth, some corruption involved in this? And that's why he can't make it. You know.
Do you know where it stands legally right now? I mean, it looks like this thing is mired up in discussion and studies and all the typical bureaucratic tape that takes projects, you know, slowly through the process.
My understanding is they're going to proceed with it. No matter what, they're still going to proceed with starting the toll roads. It was supposed to start this year, but I think it's been delayed maybe till next year. But when you've got thousands of people in local government saying this is not a good idea and it's not going to help people, it's going to create a financial hardship. If they have to pay a $10 or $20 toll to go 20 miles on an interstate is just ridiculous. And again, the killer is the contract has a stipulation in that North Carolina cannot do anything with I-77 for 50 years.
Right. Well, like I said, this is a big issue. People, you know, most people across the rest of the state are not aware of how this is. Governor Corey has said that the contract is a done deal and the project is moving forward. And
that's
it's 26
saying,
miles, right? $650 million, I think, is the cost right now.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I appreciate your call. Please stay in touch with us about this, okay? Keep us up to date.
I sure will.
Promise?
I promise.
You got it, man. Thank you for the phone call. So we appreciate that. We're going to take a quick break. Much more to go. I haven't even gone through my good, bad, and ugly yet. It's not by any stretch is it a comprehensive list, but we're going to talk about it. Stay tuned. Take a quick break. We'll be right back here on What Matters with Chad Adams. Thanks for the phone call. Phone number 919-747-9421. Stay tuned.
Conservatism in America is said to be as old as the Republic itself. But what are its foundational principles, and how did they form the modern conservative movement? Join Civitas Wednesday, October 14th at the Dilworth Neighborhood Grill in Charlotte for a special book signing event with Conservative Heroes author Garland Tucker. Hear the story of 14 champions of conservative thought, some well-known, others hardly remembered. It's an exciting tour from the founding of America to the modern age. Author Garland S. Tucker III traces the development of the basic tenets of conservatism and shows how leaders put principle into action. Purchase your tickets now by going to nccivitas.org and clicking on events. They're selling out fast, so don't miss the chance to be a part of the conservative discussion. Again, that's nccivitas.org/events for tickets.
Are North Carolina conservatives outnumbered by the left? The establishment media would have you believe that North Carolina is a solidly blue state, but the truth is that most voters identify as conservative. Thankfully, the Civitas Institute has the facts when it comes to what North Carolinians really believe. Civitas is the only organization in the state that conducts monthly live caller public opinion polling. Every month, live callers ask 600 likely voters what they think about their elected leaders, public policy issues, and the most pressing issues of the day. Want to see what your fellow citizens think? Join the Civitas Institute for one of our upcoming poll launch events. The next event will be in Wilmington on October 7th, then in Raleigh on October 8th. Visit nccivitas.org/events to learn more and register. These events always sell out, so make sure you get your tickets today at nccivitas.org/events or call 919-747-8068.
Okay. Appreciate the phone call. All phone calls, always one of my favorite parts of radio. Always, always was, always will be, is you. People who care enough to pick up a phone and call. It's hard to call. I always encourage people, call your mayor, call your city council, call your county commissioners, call your representatives, your senators, your congressional folks, call the governor's office, call the president's office. You have something. We do live in a system that allows you to do that. Now, very few people take advantage of that, you know, until they live in a society where they can't, and then all of a sudden it becomes really important. But do. And so part of radio I love is hearing from folks. We love phone calls, 919-747-9421. Now, before I get into the good, the bad, and the ugly, let me give you a couple words to share with you. And who might have said them? You know, from time to time, we have been tempted to believe that society has become too complex to be managed by self-rule, that government by an elite group is superior to government for, by, and of the people. But if no one among us is capable of governing himself, then who among us has the capacity to govern someone else? All of us together, in and out of government, must bear the burden. The solutions we seek must be equitable, with no one group singled out to pay a higher price. We hear much of special interest groups. Our concern must be for a special interest group that has been too long neglected. It knows no sectional boundaries or ethnic and racial divisions, and it crosses political party lines. It is made up of men and women who raise our food, patrol our streets, man our mines and our factories, teach our children, keep our homes, and heal us when we're sick. Professionals, industrialists, shopkeepers, clerks, cabbies, and truck drivers. They are, in short, we the people, this breed we call Americans. Now, if I had said the first line of that paragraph, you would have known who said that. But isn't it interesting? When we juxtapose that statement, because the person who said it, the first line of it, in this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. That was Ronald Reagan in his first inaugural address. And it's kind of a governing principle for many conservatives. It was his. So, I mean, it's not like we're adopting Reagan's. It's that he had it. He developed it. As he was going through the manifestations of the role of government, he came to that conclusion, and it's a very clear, easy solution. It's not government first. It's we the people. And I love what he says about people. If you think you can't govern yourself, why do you think someone else can govern you? Why do you think that someone governing people is better than people governing themselves? Because they're all people. And that's one of the weird things. So when I juxtapose that statement, I want you to think about this legislative session. I want you to think about the Republicans that are in charge. I want you to think about what you think of what they did. Not what I think, but what you think about what they did. And if you're sitting in one of those offices, if you're a Democrat, Republican, we know several of you listen. And if you're an activist or you're just someone who's running your business, I want you to think. If no one among us is capable of governing himself, then who among us has the capacity to govern someone else? All of us together, in and out of government, must bear the burden. The solutions we seek must be equitable, with no one group singled out to pay a higher price. Now, I would add to that, no single group should pay a higher price, true. No single group should be given the largesse of government over another group.
We are singling out different groups, the film industry, historic properties, solar, wind. We are singling out them and treating them differently. That's not Reagan-esque at all. That's not conservative at all. Well, let's go with the good, the bad, and the ugly now. The good, the bad. The good, the bad, and the ugly now. So some of the there were some good parts. There were good pieces of this legislative session. They took too long. But there were some good things. There was some reg reform stuff in there. There were tax cuts. We're seeing we are seeing our state move toward more of a consumption-based tax, getting rid of income taxes. That would be grand. We're lowering the corporate income tax. That's an incentive, a good incentive to come here, meaning you pay less in taxes. We don't need you to pay it and then us turn around and give it back to you. We don't need to give you something to come here. We're trying to lower your burden so that it's better and easier for you to set up your company here. Good stuff. Also, they got rid of the solar subsidies in spite of some of the kookaberry things that were done by misguided Republicans. I mean, it was just kind of sad that there were people trying to shove pieces of solar at the last minute. I mean, it was like playing whack-a-mole. Is it in this legislation? Is it in this legislation? That was foolish. But the good news is it didn't cross the finish line. So all of that waste, they took taxpayer money, and instead of banking it, they paid dozens of lobbyists to go down there and try to extort money, your money, back into their pockets. So here's to all of the failed solar lobbyists. Hoorah. Your epic failure is duly noted, and we appreciate that. That's the good. You also got kind of a Tabor. You kind of a taxpayer bill of rights, although that's not what it was called. But they, you know, as Americans for Prosperity pointed out, look, the state government grew at a rate that was below population and inflation, 3.1%, in spite of the kookaberries at the House. The Tim Moore side of the Republican caucus, the Nelson Dollar and David Lewis leadership that were leading us down $1 billion in new spending, ratcheted back in the end. And we got under a Tabor thing. So the Senate and House got together and much more responsible overall. That's the good. Now the bad. Bad, well, local control. I mean, under the guise of social engineering, you know, the Republicans feel that they needed to stop some of the communities they felt were a little lefty. So they just wanted to exert control over the local level. Now, the intent may have been okay, but they forget that there's a responsibility of local citizens to elect. And what the unintended consequence of exerting local control like that and pushing your thumb down on a local community, it emboldens. If your attempt was to stop the left at the local level, all you're going to do is embolden them because you've given them the perfect foil, you. So rather than conservative citizens rising up in different communities across the state to fight the battle, now they can all say, look at what they're doing. They're trying to control you from Raleigh. So you just protected those liberals in those communities. So instead of having communities rise up, you gave them a reason to rise up against the legislature rather than their liberal leaders. So that was bad. Some solar. We still have a safe harbor for projects that are already in place. And, you know, there's some study out there about how toxic solar is, but the fact that some solar, this is bad, not horrible, but it's bad, and a lack of conservative focus. Throughout this legislative session, there hasn't been a focus, a remote conservative focus, especially in the House, more manifest in the House. But you saw it here, especially in the last couple days. They're just, and that's the sad part about this bad part. Is that a lot of that would have alleviated some of the struggles that we've seen. Had they had a conservative focus, there would have been much less, many more agreements rather than disagreements. There would not have been some of the stuff between the governor and the House and the Senate. It just wouldn't have been that stark. But this is what happens when you don't have, and this is the problem, and we wish Speaker Moore, we'd love to have him. We'll work to get him on the show. The governor can come on the show. Surely Speaker Moore can. To have him on the show and wonder why there is not that governing philosophy. Tom Tillis was kind of a center-right. He was much closer, very moderate, and Tom would go and do interviews. But you know what? There was more of a conservative focus even when Senator Tillis, then Speaker Tillis, was there. Now the ugly. The ugly part, clearly, there was an epic failure of the inability. They did not do their job. They took too much time. They had plenty of money. There was a golden opportunity to present a budget and have it on time. The one thing the citizens of this state asked of you was to get the budget done by July 1st. You didn't. That's ugly. And I'm not telling you that because I'm any better than any one of you. None of this comes from that position. It comes from the simple fact the citizens really want you to do more. Too many games. You guys were playing all sorts of games throughout this session. One-upsmanship, parliamentary games, backdoor deals, hiding things from the public, doing things out of sight, and political favoritism. Even the way the budget was done, you made overtures to a lot of groups that you knew weren't going to ultimately be funded just to get votes. This pay-to-play stuff, it was just bad. It was very childish. It was very immature. It was a sense of power hungry. There was certainly a lot of power hungry games. Even the way in which we dealt with Medicaid, the fact that one particular member in the House was able to stick his head in the sand and say, no, 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 that he didn't want managed care. He wanted to protect one group of individuals rather than having a really dynamic discussion, including managed care, which ultimately some good things happened even there on the Medicaid stuff, but not. We're not completely there, but at least it was better. But it was a little ugly the way it went down. These political committees that were created, these new affiliated political committees, the APCs, it may not be in the headlines in the news because they don't understand it. But the simple truth is, this is bad. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes down. And certainly incentives. Something that from a conservative standpoint, that we are so ashamed of our state that we have to apologize in the form of giving people something here. Oh, our state's not good enough. Well, what if we give you something? It's always that. What if you bring a company that competes with a company that's paying taxes here? You're playing favorites. This is just a little silly. The way it says, now, I don't know if this is our guest or if this is a phone call Lisa has taken over there. But the entire, and I don't want to beat this incentive thing. We've talked about it ad nauseum on this show. And I'm sure we'll talk about it again in the future. But again, the good, the bad, and the ugly, there were some good things. I don't want you to think it was can't throw it all out. And that took some hard work and some heavy lifting. But some of the bad and some of the ugly and the fact that we are talking about everything just getting wrapped up and it's going to be October. Is that someone who needs to be on now, Miss Lisa? Who do we have on?
We have on Todd. He is currently out at Oak Island, but he is from Farmville.
Todd from Farmville, Oak Island. Welcome to the show. I'll give you a couple minutes. What's going on, man?
Hey, well, I'm just trying to recharge the batteries, go a little spiritual renewal after feeling like toilet paper here past couple of days. I feel used. I felt like I had been used with a lot of disinformation, and whether it be intentional from people or they too were misled, I'm very disappointed in our leadership, and I just wanted to say that to the people that are out there feeling the same way, you must not quit, because walking away is unforgivable. If you have children or grandchildren, you can't give away your state to corporatism. This is so close to fascism, it's frightening. And we need to wake up to this and say we're going to double down. We're going to renew our spirits in whatever way it takes. I'm out here enjoying these great, beautiful gifts of this coastline here near Wilmington. And it's a beautiful gift from God, and so is this government that we have. as bad as it feels like that it's not a gift from God, more of a curse from Satan. But that tool is there for us to use, and we must not give up on it, Chad. And I want to encourage people not to walk away. It will only weaken us and strengthen the wrong side.
And Todd, you're referring, yesterday you were somewhat hopeful that House Bill 373 would be vetoed. You were hoping that these affiliated political committees would be stripped out, only to find out at night that not only was it not vetoed, that more of them were added, and that the executive director of the party said, hey, this is what the grassroots wanted.
Yeah, right. I'm disappointed in more ways than I can really enumerate. And I know some of these representatives personally that voted for it. We can't throw all of them out with the bathwater. Some people were simply misled, like I was yesterday. I led some very important activists across the state that believed something that wasn't true, and I did it based on information that I was sworn to secrecy on in terms of people who were telling me this information, and it was bad. It was bad information. I feel bad about it, but I accept the full responsibility of having put that word out there that the veto was used, and it was not used. And it's on me. I accept that responsibility. But I don't want folks to give up. I mean, this is the way these guys can operate from time to time. And there's going to be another game plan, and there's going to be another day. But walking away and quitting is not the solution to this problem. Doubling down, getting some folks involved, and supporting tools out there like Liberty Torch Pack is out there to help constitutional conservatives, grassroots folks, running for anything from dog catcher all the way up to governor. It's a state pack. It's one that I'm treasurer of. We don't take a penny. In our pockets, we don't get any kind. If I raised $1 million, not one penny of that goes in my pocket for raising it or for salary or for nothing. If I run into some expenses, I may pay myself back, but I have never done that yet in 2.5 years. I've swallowed my expenses, such as travel and meals out when I'm trying to encourage people to give. And I don't know of another pack running like that. And so those are just tools that we can use. We shouldn't give up. We should find candidates to run, and we should selectively target the right places where we have chances of winning. Don't have to take out everybody, but if you make an example of a few, you can do a whole lot more damage than you ever imagined.
Well, Todd, I appreciate we're at the bottom of the hour, and we have a guest coming up soon. But, Todd, thank you for the call, man. And I do appreciate it. I hope you will tell your friends, and I hope we hear more from – we need to hear more from folks out there. And enjoy your day at Oak Island. My parents live down there at the other end near the lighthouse, but enjoy your time at Oak Island. It is a beautiful place to be, man.
Oh, thank you, sir, and I'm certainly having a great time with meditation, but I wanted to talk to you before you got off the air.
You got it, man. Thanks for the phone call. Todd, visiting Oak Island from Farmville. I'll be speaking in Tarboro next week on October the 6th, and then on the 7th, I'm speaking in Wilmington. We need to take a break. We'll take more about that before we get to the end of the show. Right now, Lisa's kicking me off the air. We'll be back in a few minutes, though. Stay tuned.
Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. Your raincoat will definitely be your new best friend for about 4 or 5 more days. Another 5 to 10 inches of rain expected to fall across central North Carolina from today through Sunday morning. News 14 is reporting the heaviest rain likely to fall Friday and Saturday. Now, that's partly due to Hurricane Joaquin. The storm has strengthened from a tropical storm to a Category 1 hurricane. That happened this morning. Now, slowly drifting also to the southwest near the Bahamas. By Friday, the storm should turn to the north and pick up some speed. Right now, it's tracking near or just off the coast of North Carolina through the weekend. During that time, it could become as strong as a Category 2 or maybe even stronger. Could be a 3 or 4. The exact track of the storm remains uncertain at this time. Many models have kept the storm just off the Carolina coast, depending on the lows that are coming in. However, some of the latest models into the forecast center suggest the storm could track even closer to the coast, potentially brushing the Outer Banks and making landfall anywhere from northeastern North Carolina to the Jersey Shore. So keep an eye on this storm. It really could affect parts of North Carolina, especially with all the rain we've had lately. Big trees could come down if we have some strong winds and with a lot more rain, because we're looking at a lot of rain across most of the state. Businesses were evacuated and traffic was blocked off along Highway 301 and Dunn this morning after a vapor leak was reported at a chemical plant. Brainerd Chemical's president happened to be on site and told WTVD the leak occurred during the unloading of a bulk tanker truck that was filled with hydrochloric acid. The vapor cloud formed after about 30 minutes because of a leaky gasket on top of the stationary tank the chemical was being pumped into. Firefighters gave the all clear after the vapor cloud moved north and dissipated. NC State football player Shadrack Thornton has had another brush with the law. This time he allegedly struck a man with his moped while driving on the sidewalk near campus. The victim had to get stitches after being knocked down an embankment. Thornton was arrested at his home and charged with failing to give aid to an injured person and failure to provide information. He has a court date at the end of October on previous charges of driving the moped without a helmet and exceeding a safe speed. He also has a past criminal record. Thornton practiced this morning for the Wolfpack. Team officials have not released a statement regarding potential punishment from Tuesday's incident. Billy Graham has released what could be his last book. WREL reports his son Franklin, president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, says, "Where I Am, Heaven, Eternity, and Our Life Beyond took 2 years to complete.
He says at 96, his father has problems seeing, hearing, and walking, but his mind is still clear, and he keeps up with world events. If you thought your commute was tough today, be thankful it didn't involve hundreds of thousands of bees. Yes, you heard that right. Hundreds of thousands of bees. Fox News Radio's Jeff Manasso has the details.
This is the sound from inside Garvin County Sheriff's Deputy Carl Zink's cruiser yesterday. It was covered with tens of thousands of bees after a truck carrying upwards of 1 million honeybees overturned on southbound I-35 south of Oklahoma City. Dozens of crates carrying bees broke open. We're told only a couple of people, including the deputy, suffered minor bee stings. And traffic was backed up for miles as beekeepers worked to capture as many as possible. No word on what caused the big rig to crash. In Chicago, Jeff Manasso, Fox News Radio.
He will be back for the 2016 session, but he's not going to be running for re-election to the state house. Representative Paul Skip Stam made the surprise announcement just before lawmakers gaveled out after an extra long session that ended at 4:18 this morning. The 65-year-old is an 8-term veteran of the chamber and is a lawyer from Apex. And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now back to more of what matters with Chad Adams.
Oh boy, what a show. You never know where it's going to go. Appreciate the calls today. Todd, thanks for the call. That was encouraging from afar, from the coastline. With us right now, AP Dillon, LadyLiberty1885.com, her blog site, and she's often very prescient on matters related to charter schools, to oligarchies, and everything in between. Welcome to the show, Miss A.P. Dillon. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm good.
Wonderful to have you. What do you make?
You've been hacking away in the middle of the interview. I apologize. I'm getting over a cold.
Oh, I figure you're hacking, meaning you're typing away. But no, you're talking about literally coughing and hacking.
That
okay.
Too.
Well, we don't have a. You need to install your own like mic button so that you know if you start coughing, you can take it out. But what do you make? You've been watching. You pay close attention to the inner workings of the General Assembly. You pay a lot of attention to the way policy unfolds. Mm-hmm. You've been tracking a lot of the charter school stuff, and hats off to you for the work you do on charter school stuff. That's been quite impressive.
Thank you.
What's your take on the General Assembly this last couple of weeks, you know, the last week and a half after the budget gets done?
It felt a little like whack-a-mole.
Yeah, it's funny that analogy keeps coming up everywhere.
Yeah, and last night's session going to, what, 4 in the morning?
4 plus, yeah.
Yeah, I gave up following stuff on Twitter around midnight last night. I was like, yeah, I
can't. Oh, come on. Like you have a life. Come on. Really? No, I'm just kidding. That's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like the Mimi out there. You're drunk, Moon. Go home. That was sort of how I felt with the legislature. You're drunk, legislature. Go home.
Yeah, they were playing football and dancing and singing. It was a regular party over there.
Yeah, they passed quite a few things that this morning when I woke up, my inbox was full of updates saying that this bill and that bill were ratified and be sent to the governor. And I didn't even get a chance to go through half of them.
I know. You haven't. I'm waiting for your litany of things to appear at your website. And I saw nothing. I was like, what?
Yeah. I've been a little bit busy. I've got my fingers in many pies, and nationally, statewide, education-wise, my inbox.
Yes.
Usually, I get up at the crack of dawn around 5:30 every day, and I go through my inbox before my kids even get up, and I barely get through it before it's time to head out the door and bring the big guy to the bus.
Now you're looking. You've looked at this educational stuff. You've been very supportive of school choice,
yeah,
and following what goes on there. You know, there's some equity funding legislation that was pending. In all of the flurry of activity, I didn't see what happened. There were so many bills flying fast and furious, as you know. I didn't know. By any chance, do you know what happened with the equitable funding law with respect to charters?
I do believe it got through.
It made it through the finish line. See, that would be in the good, the bad, and the ugly. That would be one of the good things.
There was one charter school bill that didn't make it through and it got tabled. And off the top of my head, I'm not sure which one that was. There were over 130 education-related bills this session.
They were. It was amazing.
I had a spreadsheet to try to keep track of it all.
Did you?
Yeah. I'm organized to a fault, and I was trying to keep tabs on most of them, and they just kept coming back rapid fire. A couple of them were of interest with the charter school area. I'm glad to see that they were taking up the charter school funding issue because, frankly, they were getting pennies on the dollar compared to what they were supposed to be getting. And, you know, that only fed into the narrative from those protecting public schools that, you know, charter schools aren't as good as public schools. Well, you know, if they were getting the same amount of funding, perhaps there might not be such a disparity with some of them. You know, having to fight for dollars that are supposed to be there for the students isn't helping anybody.
And when you look at it, now I saw some stuff yesterday. I do some work with charter schools as well for the Charter School Initiative in North Carolina. And, you know, I'm seeing all these new charter applications that are coming out. I think we're going to have 16 new schools that'll come online next year. And there are like 26, 28 applications that are being looked at right now. So we're seeing the school choice movement grow. But the equitable funding, I mean, 83 cents on the dollar. Some places it's a little less. It's just kind of sad. And yet at the same time, school administrators and those educrats will say, oh, no, they're taking money away. And Buncombe County, someone you wrote about today, as a matter of fact, Buncombe County is in western North Carolina. They always scream that charter schools are just killing them.
Oh, yeah, and then they make, you know, they decide to fund things like, you know, high school football lights instead of, you know, paying for teachers. that was something that they pulled not so long ago, paying for the teacher assistants wasn't a priority. The high school football lights, that was a priority. And now there's this business going on with this food labs renovation.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about this. This is an interesting post you've got.
It was sent to me by some folks over in Buncombe, and Mark Cates reached out. I reached out to groups that were involved with him, and he said that go ahead, post my Facebook comment. From what it looked like to me, there were multiple food labs in the Buncombe County schools that were in need of updating and renovating. Part of it was for disability access issues, ADA issues, that sort of thing, which is all fine and good. But when you actually drilled down and looked into the documents, they were basically overhauling these entire food systems and like giving them a brand new everything, you know, when it necessarily didn't need it. And they were saying that, you know, they were going to have STEM students help to, you know, diagram these things and to help plan these things. And funneling them into the food service industry somehow. It went all askew, and I think Cates' post stands for itself. You know, it's sort of a narrative that I've seen come out where those pushing Common Core and rah-rah STEM jobs, the myth narrative about STEM jobs, they seem to think that, you know, hey, we need more truck drivers. Hey, we need more food service workers. But Common Core!
Yes.
You know, reach higher. Everyone should go to college, but, you know, hey, we need these food service workers, and we need this, that, and the other thing. And I've noticed that a lot of businesses in some of the districts, smaller districts, have come into play, and business should have a voice in education, obviously, but they shouldn't have the only voice. I've seen instances where certain businesses that are the only show in town in certain districts have come in and talked to educators about, you know, building skill sets that basically point kids right to their industry.
Right.
You know, using the taxpayer dollar as their training facility.
Not the community college, but the
right,
actual school.
Exactly.
System.
And I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting kids involved with, you know, businesses and trying out new things. And
or doing some vocational education. I mean,
right, exactly. You know,
but Common Core doesn't like vocational education.
Well, Common Core is, it's a conundrum there. They say that they, you know, they want to make kids career and college ready. Well, they put the career in there because only a certain fraction of these kids who are under Common Core are going to make it to the college-ready side of the house.
Right.
The rest of them are going to get shuttled off to vocational school and to two-year community colleges, which is actually the intent of Common Core, is to peel off kids into silos. You're going to college. You're going to community college. You're going to vocational college. And tests that go along with the Common Core, like the ACT, they have various packages there that hit certain grade levels, 7th grade, 9th grades, whatnot. And it helps gauge what interests kids have or what strengths they have, and then it funnels them towards those strengths, whether or not they want to go in that direction. It's really stacking business expectations. And as I've said before, you know, education should definitely have a voice at the table. You know, they are the ones who the children will go out, and after they get their education, will get a job. And, yeah, I can see where their buy-in is. But right now, education and their various education nonprofits across the state are driving education narratives into their pocket.
In fact,
they own the table and all the chairs around it. Nobody else can sit down.
Mark Cates, from your blog post at LadyLiberty1885.com. So let's think this through. Teaching our kids how to work in the food service industry needs to be kept in the local schools, but teaching our kids how to be scientists and engineers, well, why would we want to make sure every kid in our school has easy access to that opportunity? Saying that, you know, the curriculum's focused more on the on one rather than opening up to the other.
Yeah, that right there you're seeing him point out an avenue that's been built that, you know, is a pipeline that's being funneling these kids.
And that's one of the people. But anyway, you can find out more about this. I've got to ask you, again, our guest, A.P. Dillon from LadyLiberty1885.com. Where'd the name come from? Just for our listeners. Where's that? I get the Lady Liberty part, but the 1885.
Well, I'm a bit of a fan of the Statue of Liberty. I saw it right before 9/11 happened. I was in New York City for training for a job, and I just happened to have some time, and I spent some time seeing the Statue of Liberty. And I was very curious about the base. There was a plaque there, and it gave the history of the base of the statue, and it was erected in 1885.
Well, there you go.
So the base of Liberty, Lady Liberty, was erected in 1885, and there were a lot of Lady Liberty blogs and that, you know, Freedom Liberty blogs and this blog and that blog out there. So I wanted to set it apart. So that little piece of trivia and history caught my eye, and I thought, that'll work.
Now, if I had to give you, I spoke with Paul Chesser earlier, and you're familiar with Paul's work over at Carolina Plothound. And I asked him, I said, so, and because I was asked this question, so I wish I'm not taking credit for it. It's not typically one I would ask. But when I was on News 14 earlier today, they're like, hey, give the legislature a grade, you know? And so you're kind of stuck. The camera's going. You have to do something. And Paul said he didn't like to answer it. I said, give him a grade. And he gave them a grade. What would your grade be? If I were to ask you to grade this legislative session, not the governor, but the legislative session, what would you say? Oh, that's the same expression Paul did on the air, that deep, long sigh.
Yeah. I think I would give them a B+ for effort.
Oh, wow. Okay, I like this breakdown.
But a C for execution.
A B+ for effort and a C for execution. That's where I gave them overall a C-. Paul gave them, I think, a D, and the Democrat on the show, Malcolm Graham, gave them a D. So those are the cumulative grades. See?
I'm thinking more on the education side of the house. They were very ambitious.
Yes.
Too ambitious with some of the stuff that they bit off, and they couldn't swallow all they could chew. There were a few bills in there that, you know, made me shake my head, and I thought to myself, my God, people, aren't you even reading what you're writing?
My good and bad and ugly needs to include that, because they did do some tectonic things on charter schools that when they moved it up with respect to the reporting, the way charter schools report and are overseen by their overlords at DPI, much better. It's almost
getting
a tectonic
them out from
shift.
Underneath DPI was the right thing to do.
Yes.
And I think if I were to grade them on that bill alone, I would have to give them, you know, a B+, A-.
Yep, I agree.
That was the right move.
That was. Very well said.
You know, when it comes to other things, though, like the health assessment form that they were doing earlier in the year, it just blew my mind that none of the legislators had actually seen the form.
Yes.
They were just going to go ahead and make all students entering public school in North Carolina fill out this form, but they hadn't even looked at it. So I pulled it up and looked at it, and it was a walking nightmare. I mean, it was something that I would expect to fill out if I was going in for invasive surgery. You know, it had everything on there from your kid's, you know, body mass index to a yes or no question about whether or not your kid's genitals were normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do they need to know that?
You know, we covered that here, as a matter of fact. Why do they need all this detailed stuff?
Yeah, well, DHHS apparently was hand-in-hand with DPI on this one, and DHHS was using it for grant studies and grant money. And as we found out down in New Hanover County, they were using this survey in order to track the fat kids based on their body mass index. So great.
The way That's you awesome. Said that was just funny, to direct the fat kids.
Yeah, basically. They were tracking the fat kids in New Hanover County. Awesome. So glad to know that.
Well,
my tax dollars.
Miss Dillon, I appreciate you being a part of the program today, all right?
No problem. Call me anytime.
AP Dillon, LadyLiberty1885.com. Thanks for being a part of the broadcast. Take a quick break. We'll be back, right back to wrap things up and head toward tomorrow. So stay tuned.
Are North Carolina conservatives outnumbered by the left? The establishment media would have you believe that North Carolina is a solidly blue state, but the truth is that most voters identify as conservative. Thankfully, the Civitas Institute has the facts when it comes to what North Carolinians really believe. Civitas is the only organization in the state that conducts monthly live caller public opinion polling. Every month, Live callers ask 600 likely voters what they think about their elected leaders, public policy issues, and the most pressing issues of the day. Want to see what your fellow citizens think? Join the Civitas Institute for one of our upcoming poll launch events. The next event will be in Wilmington on October 7th, then in Raleigh on October 8th. Visit nccivitas.org/events to learn more and register. These events always sell out, so make sure you get your tickets today at nccivitas.org/events or call 919-747-8068.
It is no coincidence that our present troubles parallel and are proportionate to the intervention and intrusion in our lives that result from unnecessary and excessive growth of government. It's time for us to realize that we are too great a state to limit ourselves to small dreams. We are not, as some would have us believe, loomed to an inevitable decline. I do not believe in a fate that will all on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing. So with all the creative energy at our command, let us begin an era of statewide renewal. Let us renew our determination, our courage, and our strength. Let us renew our faith and our hope. I paraphrased Ronald Reagan's inaugural address. Would it be interesting, as I speak to you in the audience, as you're listening, whether you're listening on the podcast, maybe you're chilling out, reading a good book, and you're listening to the podcast. You know, you've got your TuneIn app going there, the iTunes app ready shortly, being reviewed. Apple takes a little while because they need to bless us. But as you're listening to this, whenever, maybe you're listening to the stream on it. You're in the morning, you're having your breakfast, you're listening, you're looking out your windows, and you're listening to the show. Or maybe you're listening live as we're getting a little break from what will be the deluge of rainfall over the next couple days. Likely to be upwards of 8, 9, 10 inches of rain. Don't know how much we'll have, but probably a bunch. Anyway, as you're cogitating on all this, can you think of a leader in the state that brings to mind that has that Reagan-esque quality? And here's the thing. It shouldn't be that rare. Conservatism isn't bad. It's not negative. It's not mean-spirited. It doesn't call people names. It's a simple philosophy of the role of government. If you do have government, and Reagan even said in his inaugural address, he doesn't want to do away with government. He needs to make it work with us, not over us, to stand by our side, not ride our back. Government can and must provide opportunity, not smother it, foster productivity, not stifle it. Isn't that a great line? It can make it work with us, not over us. Stand by our side, not ride our back. Government can and must provide opportunity, not smother it. Foster productivity, not stifle it. So when you look at this legislative session, now that it's history, it's in the past, do we really believe that it provided more opportunity? I think in education, it did. I think on tax reform, it did. So some good things there. But as far as some of these others, these affiliated political committees, that's a corruption. I mean, that's not corrupt, but it lends itself to corruption very easily. You know, did they, you know, the incentives and the use of incentives, does that really foster productivity or stifles it? It brings competition to companies that are already here. It rewards people for false things. It's not treating people as equals. I mean, when they go crushing with local ordinances and they go after Airbnb, what about Airbnb told you that government was going to stand by our side and not ride our back? What about passing new ordinances on it fosters productivity rather than stifling it? And what about all these new regulations provides opportunities instead of smothering it? These are the type of questions that I ask you. And I think that there are some great people out there that channel that belief. Again, we often extol the virtues of Reagan and put him up on a pedestal, but remember, he was a reflection of an ideology. When he brings a Milton Friedman in to help advise him on economic policy, he's bringing in a smart guy that knows what he's doing. It wouldn't have been neat if there was a host of Milton, many Milton Friedmans being brought into state government. People who look at things in that kind of simple economic vision. I mean, a simple economic vision. Get it out of the way. If you really were concerned about Airbnb, the concern shouldn't be that it's doing so well. It's that other businesses could be doing better.
Why is Airbnb doing so well? Because it's not as heavily regulated. Okay. The goal is to create more economic activity. Get the regulations that are stifling other things out of the way. Why is Uber doing so well? Why is Lyft doing so well? Because it's not as heavily regulated. Maybe we ought to figure out a way to regulate things less. Take the hint. But no, what did this legislature do? We found new ways to regulate. And a party, the one party of the two that we've got, the one that should be saying, don't regulate, is the Republican Party. The governor should be the champion of deregulation. The governor should be the champion of getting government out of the way. The government should be the champion of getting even incentives out of the way. You want to preserve historic properties? Get some of the regulations governing them out of the way. Make sure that maybe they get lower interest loans, but don't. You know, come on. You don't need to reshuffle the deck with taxpayer money and give it to select groups. Who's to determine what's historical? If it's 25 years old, is it historical? I mean, cars are considered antiques if they're that age. What's the proper age? Who determines it? Oh, would that be a government official that determines if it's historic? The community? The free market could determine what something when something is historic, and it places another value on it. Why, if something great happens there in that location becomes worth a lot more as an historic piece of property. Not less. I mean, really. Grandfather Mountain was private for a long time. Really cool place to go. Chimney Rock. People valued it. People valued it. By the way, just for those of you who don't know, I will be on, for those of you listening live, I'll be on News 14 Carolina this evening. For those of you listening on this podcast, I was on News 14 Carolina. If you're listening to the stream, then, well, depending on what time, at 7 p.m. Wednesday evening. By the way, one last, I'm going to try to get the last bit of update here. It'll be a bit dated to some of you, but the hurricane situation is very interesting out there. There's going to be a lot of rain is what everyone is predicting. Multiple inches, 4 to 9 inches of rain in almost every part of the state, except for you folks in the far, far west that will get less. But the National Weather Service has issued flash flood watches for counties from 8 p.m. Thursday through 8 p.m. Saturday. Pretty much if you're hearing this, you're probably on this. The ground is already saturated. So what the dealio is there is that you've got a lot of water already in the ground, a couple more inches likely to fall, and it doesn't take a lot to push these beautiful trees over that we have in this state. It's not going to be the wind that's going to do it necessarily. It's so wet. It's a soaking rain that we've had. We're going to have more. So we've got a cold front coming into the area Wednesday, early Thursday, and this is from WRAL, where it will interact with an area of low pressure coming from the Gulf. And then that stalls here, and that's going to give us a couple inches of rain. And then we have whatever it's going to be. I don't know how close that Joaquin. And I love the text message I got a while ago. How's Joaquin going to get here? He's going to walk in. Walk in here. Regardless of the impact of Hurricane Joaquin, North Carolina has the potential for life-threatening flooding within the next week. We don't know yet how much or how widespread the flooding will be, but we know there will be flooding, State Emergency Management Director Mike Sprayberry said in a statement. So a little bit more that they want to be sure your emergency supply kit has enough bottled water and non-perishable food to sustain you for a couple days in case. Check for your pets. Get supplies for your dogs, cats, wombats, whatever you have. Keep it easily accessible. Prepare your home. Clean out your gutters. Clean property of debris that could damage buildings in strong winds. Anything laying around in your yard, if it can blow around, take a look at it. Make sure you get it out of the way. Make sure if you're in a floodplain or flood-prone area, know the evacuation routes and listen to your local news for the latest advisories. Now, obviously, while we're on the air the rest of the week, we're going to keep you in informed as best we can here on the freedomactionnetwork.com. And Lisa is keeping a close eye on things, so we'll do the best we can, and we appreciate you being a part of our broadcast as always. Folks, have a great day. Enjoy it. Enjoy your family and friends. The degree to which you enjoy happiness will be directly related to that and your health. If you have it, keep it as long as you can. And folks, as bad as it was the legislative session, depending on your viewpoint, you know what? We do have an obligation. We have an obligation to fight for those things we believe in. We live in a society that allows people like me to say literally whatever we want. And I'm allowed to do that. And they can disagree with me, and it's not personal. It's about the issues. It's about what we believe. And we live in a country and a state that we can take things on and make a difference. If you don't like it, get involved. Get people to run. Challenge some of the status quo. Call them. Be involved. But we appreciate you as always. Have a great day, folks. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow at 3 p.m.